that or some more refreshments as you sit and hear our testimony and teaching. All right. Here's Chris.
All right, how's everybody doing? Everybody hear me okay? Mic or no? They call that my drill sergeant voice when I'm coaching in jiu-jitsu. They laugh at me because I'm always yelling at the kids. I mean, there's 3 and 4 year olds or whatever. I'm yelling at them and they're laughing. All right, so for those of you that don't know me, I think most of you know me, but not everybody. I see some faces I don't know. Chris Manley, I've been here at Marine for a really long time, 19 years about, roughly. So why I'm speaking today, Terry cornered me. Where's Terry? So he cornered me at breakfast one Friday and was like, "Hey, thanks for sharing. Am I sharing with everybody?" All right, fine. I guess I'll speak with everybody. So I appreciate that, though. And, you know, Terry's not the type of person you say no to. You know, he's a salesman, so kind of sold me on that stuff. So, but brief history of who I am. So I'm going to go over who I am, a couple of things that I've been through, and there's a reason that I'm going to share what I'm sharing tonight. So who I am. So as a kid, I kind of moved around a little bit. I didn't stay in the same house for more than, I don't know, a year, maybe two, when I was a kid, up until about high school. And then I stayed in the same house for about 3 years, and then I graduated. Joined active duty Air Force. This was back in 99, so to give you a little context, I'm 41 years old. Joined in 99, I had to get out, I had to go do something. And it was active duty. Let's see, I did that for about 5 years. 2004, I left active duty, met my wife. That's when I started coming here, Marine. In 2006, I wanted to get married, and I wanted to have a family, right? And so I'm like, okay, well, I got to kind of have a job and like a purpose in life. I was going to school at the time. I need to have insurance to help cover some things if I need that. So I joined the Guard. The Guard is like a reserve, for those of you that don't know. So I was in the Wyoming Air National Guard. Living here, but I would travel out to Wyoming every few months and go do that. But they paid for my entire bachelor's degree, so it was worth it to me. So did that, did ground radio maintenance with that. At the same time, I came back from my initial training with that about a year later. Got married, still didn't have a job. And I'm like, I guess we got to figure this out. I started working for Panasonic Automotive. Did that for about 5 years, so I was doing Guard on the side, right? The one making a month, 2 weeks, a year type of thing. And then I was working for Panasonic Automotive, doing purchasing, inventory control, that kind of stuff. Got my bachelor's degree in 08. So that was 07. I started working for Panasonic and got married.
Chris.
Yes.
What was your bachelor's degree in?
Business administration. That's what I want. That's how much I care about my bachelor's degree. A piece of paper to get a job. So that's what it was. I was working full time and homeschool full time for 5 years, trying to get that done. So it was pretty crazy. So 07 got married, started working for Panasonic. 08 got my bachelor's degree. 09 I knew I wanted a commission. So that's the other thing that you get with that piece of paper is it enables you to apply for a commission as an officer in the military. And so I'm like, yeah, I want to do that. Well, in order to do that, you don't have to, but you kind of should know somebody in the unit, right? I wanted a commission here because I lived here. And so I transferred here, became crew chief on the A-10 aircraft. Anybody familiar with the A-10 aircraft? Okay, good. Yeah, so it's pretty awesome. So I did that for a little while. 2012, I deployed to Afghanistan the first time, working as a crew chief on the A-10. That was pretty awesome. Meeting some folks that are on the ground in the villages, working out here and there, taking fire, and then coming and thanking us because they wouldn't be here if it wasn't for what we did. So it was pretty awesome. It was a good time. Got back. I actually interviewed. Is Brad here today? Brad's not here today. So I was actually in Afghanistan and followed Brad Seacrest. Taryn and Michelle had talked and Brad was looking for somebody to work for him, so I called him up from Afghanistan, and I'm like, hey, this is what I'm looking at, and stuff like that, and he's like, yeah, you should come help me. He was the CFO of the company, and I'm like, Brad, I know nothing about accounting, you know this, right? And he's like, yeah, but I know who you are, and I know how you think, and so I'll teach you accounting. I'm like, okay. So it worked, it was good. So I did that, so I got back in August of 2012, started working for Brad. My first drill back, I interviewed for a commissioning position. Usually it takes about 2 years to get that whole process going and stuff like that. August, I interviewed. September, I got told I got the position. October, I turned the paperwork in. And by January, I was gone. The training. I mean, it was wild. Absolutely wild. We had a six-week-old at home. And I walked in and I said, it was a Tuesday. And I said, hey, babe, I got to go like Friday. And it's like basic training. So you can't call. You can't talk. You can't take care of stuff. And yeah, sorry, I got to go. See you later. So, but that worked out, so it was a good thing. Came back still working for Brad, kind of seeing if we could settle things down a little bit. And then, you know, just when they were starting to settle down, I told Brad, I'm like, you know, I'm going to go pursue this military thing full time. And so I quit my job with him, started what we call guard bumming, which means I pick up any days, any different types of orders that I could to kind of try to make ends meet. And to get a full-time job out there to let them know that, hey, I'm committed to being out here full-time, whatever that means. And that worked out pretty well. Yeah, in my hunt for full-time employment, that's what brought our family down to Tucson, Arizona. Moved down there in January of 2016. Still working aircraft. I was working on the F-16 down there in the training unit. It was pretty awesome. We had 90 acres, and we had 90 F-16s on 90 acres. So anytime we got more than 90, they would shut down the parking lot and literally park the aircraft right there. It was pretty funny. It was an awesome mission, though. June of 2017, so the following year, so we were only down there 18 months. We moved back here, and I transferred back to the Michigan Air National Guard. Decided to get my master's degree at that time, so we moved back in the summer of 17. Beginning of 18, so I enrolled in a master's program, I guess you could say, up at Michigan State. I applied for and was accepted to it in business analytics. So that's what that was. That one I care about, so I know that for sure. So I took 10 years off between the bachelor's and master's, but I wanted to do what I really cared about doing. I truly, truly enjoyed the analytics side of that. So I'm a big Excel nerd, and that was like Excel on steroids. So it was a lot of fun. So a lot of programming, statistics. It was great. So did that all of 2018. So that was January to December, graduated in December. In the middle of that, in the summer, as I'm going through my summer program, I was taking my first statistics class, which was an 800-level class, in 3 weeks. And it was intense. And it was from the beginning of the day to the end of the day. It was great. Plus homework and projects on top of that. It was insane. I was actually staying with a family out in Holt. That was connected to the church out there. What's that pastor's name out there?
The Hollins?
What is it? Fred Froman, yes. Anybody's married in the church. Got connected with somebody out there. Lived out there for a couple of weeks just to get all the work in and do all of that stuff. So anyway, in the middle of that, I get a phone call. It was one of my best friends. And he's like, hey, we're for sure deploying next year. And I'm the guy leading the trip. I need you as my number two. Okay, cool. You know, we got nothing else going on, so why not, right? So graduated in December, and then we're planning this deployment all during the last half of that. Graduated in December. By I guess it was March, we were out the door. We were gone. A lot of stuff went into that. So I'll get into that a little bit more later. So out the door in March, got back in August. I stepped off the C-5 out of my base, which is pretty awesome. And the wing commander out there is a one-star general. He's in charge of the entire base. 1,400 Air Force personnel plus a bunch of tenants, like 60 people rent space on the base. He runs the whole thing. He's considered the mayor. That's kind of one of his jobs, right, is to be the mayor. He walked up to me. He's like, hey, great job on the deployment. They really appreciate everything you did. You want to work for me? And so,
yeah.
So I finally got a full-time job, you know, like 4 years ago, I don't know. And started working for him. So I was his executive officer. So basically any piece of paperwork that went across his desk, I was the one that QC'd it and made sure it was okay. And then set up appointments, meetings for him, controlled his calendar completely. He said there's three people that can control his life. It's his wife, him, and me. And that was it. So that was my job for about 3 years. That was pretty awesome. And then just this past year, I was hired on as the aircraft maintenance commander for the A-10s. So we're on a flight line and deal with all of that. So. And then in the middle of there, you know, like I said, I got married, and then, you know, we had 7 kids. So, not too much going on in there. So that's kind of my story in a nutshell. Usually, like, if I interview, that's a little bit of my elevator speech, right? If I interview for a job, but usually I'll throw the kids in there, and by the third one, people just set their pens down and just sit there and go, and they just start listening and then ask the questions, which is great. Makes it more personal, you know? My salvation, when did I get saved? So we rarely went to church when we were younger. I had grandparents, some were Episcopalian, some were Catholic, some were some combination of whatever. Nobody really went to church. Nobody really exuded anything. I didn't really have any interest in any spiritual things. Nothing was ever shared with me when I was young, not that I remember. And then after I joined the Air Force in 99, I got to my station in Cheyenne, Wyoming, where Jesse was. He was there for a couple of years. We were there a couple of years at the same time. Didn't know each other, but we were there. My mother got diagnosed with cancer in 2000. And so one of our buddies, you know, he didn't go out having fun with us, you know, on all the cool trips that we went on, you know, as young men. And I asked him, I'm like, hey, can I go to church with you? And he's like, yeah. And so I told him what was going on, and he was there, and listened, and took care of me, and brought me to church, and I made a profession of faith. And then about a year later, one day I was getting ready for work, my second job, because one's not enough. And so I'm getting ready for work, and he showed up at my apartment for whatever reason, and he's like, hey, dude, you still call yourself a Christian? I'm like, well, what do you mean? He's like, dude, you have no fruit. There's zero fruit in your life. Just flat call me out. And I was really defensive because I know everything. I didn't know anything. But he was right. He was right. And later on that night, I truly reflected on what it is that he said. And I made a profession of faith and repented on my own, in my apartment, by myself. And things changed quite a bit after that. I was saved into a Calvary chapel. If anybody's familiar with that, it's a West Coast thing. So very Arminian. So a lot of different teaching than you would find here. Anybody who was here in 04, was anybody here in 04? So imagine being saved in a very Arminian church and then coming here in 04. It was different. Actually, the first teaching that I ever heard was George Moore in Sunday school, right in that class we made. I started dating Michelle in the fall, or I guess it was the winter of 04, December of 04, and from that time, I would take her on a short date, and then dump her off, and then I'd go hang out with Gary Papp. Everybody familiar with Gary Papp? Yeah, so he's my father-in-law. So I'd hang out with him for hours, and he just poured into me, and it was awesome. So that's kind of the story of my salvation, and been here kind of ever since, so you guys have to deal with me. Alright, so why I do what I do? So I'm in the military, right? I have a military mindset. That's the way I think. That's kind of what I do. I pursued employment outside the military. I had employment outside the military. Mike Mumford is a big mentor of mine on the side. When I worked for Panasonic, he and I met weekly for years. And he really poured into me as well. When I was getting my master's degree, I was pursuing employment outside, because I still didn't have a full-time job, right? And I was pursuing employment outside of the military, and he'd slap at me like, okay, I'll help you out. And he helped me out, you know, but it just wasn't right? So I've always been striving to be the best that I can be and work the hardest that I can. I'm not the smartest person, as you can tell. I'm not the most physically gifted, but I'll work most people. So I work very, very hard, and that's just always been my MO. I will outwork just about everybody, and that's how I get by. That's what I do. And so that's always been kind of ingrained in me. It's one of the good things that my dad taught me, just to work hard and have a work ethic.
I feel like I've been gifted in leadership. I've always kind of felt that a little bit. It's been honed and changed and molded over the years. When I joined in 99, when I joined the Air Force, I realized that working hard and understanding how an organization should work does not equate to leadership. Right? Those two things are very, very different. So I watched and I learned from a lot of different leaders that I respected. Most of them were very different than me. So it was kind of interesting and a little weird to me, you know. So I would start to like try to emulate some of the things that they would do. But it wasn't me, you know. So I needed to figure out how to take what it is that they did and how it is that they led and how it is that they influenced people and got people to move. And what does that mean to me? How can I do that? Can I do that? Maybe I can't. And so for the longest time, I was very, very dead set that, yeah, I'm a great number two, and I can support a leader very, very well, but I'm not necessarily a leader myself. I can't necessarily be that front man. And I don't think that's necessarily true anymore. But so over time, I just kind of learned how to mold that into my personality and do that. And I always encourage people as they grow to take the gifts that they've been given. Don't buck against who it is that you are and who it is that you know you are intrinsically. Take the things and the knowledge and the things that you learn and put it through your personality and make sure that it's through your personality. When you don't, it comes off as not genuine. And when you're not genuine, people can see right through that, right? You've seen it in people, I've seen it in people, but over time, those things come out. So, but if you're genuine and you're really trying to go through your personality, people respect that. And I learned that. And so it's taken a lot of time, a lot of failures to go through and to do those things. So, understanding the big picture, I'm very much a big picture thinker. I don't do great at the tactical level of things, so right in the nitty gritty of things. You know, like I said, I'm not the most physical gifted. When I was a crew chief, I wasn't the best at turning wrenches. I loved it. It was a lot of fun. But I actually had a crew chief ask me when I got accepted for the commission, why are you doing this? Why do you want to go do that? This is awesome. And I'm like, this is awesome. But I know I can help many, many more people by doing that than I can this, because I can handle that. I can handle all the garbage that comes with being in a leadership position. And filter that down and allow you guys to work, right? So, you know, I'm a big picture thinker. I like theory. I like intent. Words like intent. This is the intent. Yeah, but that's not what the black and white says. I don't care what the black and white says. This is the intent. Let's press forward, right? Leaders don't come in one mold. I've told Gabriel this a few times. So my son Gabriel sits back here. I don't know if you guys know. So at jiu-jitsu, I told you I'm really loud, right? Really loud. And this kid, it's hilarious. We have one kid, he's 4 years old. He comes in for 6 months during the warm-ups. Every single class, he would cry because I was so loud. He would do every warm-up, and he was fine. It's just I was so loud that it overwhelmed him, and he would cry. And now he can't stop smiling. So it's a lot of fun, right? But Gabriel is not like me. Right? And we talked before, and I'm like, dude, lead within who you are. You know, you don't have to be loud like me. So, you know, anybody who grew up around here knows Steve Eisman, right? Not a loud man. But when he spoke, everybody listened, right? So lead within your personality is very, very important. So. All right, so now I'll start. So that was kind of the backdrop. So now I'll start. In 2019, when I deployed, so leading up to that, I was in that master's program. Like I said, I'm not the smartest guy in the world. I'm fairly intelligent, but I'm not the smartest. I don't do books very well. I don't test very well. I read very, very slowly. And I know all of this, right? I actually had one class, I told the instructor, I said, I'm not going to let your grade get in the way of my education. I'm going to learn. And if it works out for a grade, then great. If not, I'm going to learn, right? That's my goal in being here. So that master's program, it was a struggle. It was hard. I had been out of school for 10 years, and I had been working. Had the real-world experience, so I knew the questions to ask, right? Like, does this program, you know, that we're sitting here ticking away at or whatever, does it make sense?
You know, is there a functionality behind this, or are we just making a nice, cool program to spit out numbers, right? So those things were good, but it was a struggle mentally for me to get past a lot of that stuff. And then, like I said, in the middle of this, I'm told that we're deploying. Okay, great. Planning stuff, great. I don't mind planning stuff. I'm the number two. This is good. You know, I can do the number two role very well. Okay, good. I can support this leader. Except not many people like this leader, so that was a little bit of a struggle. And then we had a lot of undermining going on around this planning from some of the other leaders in the organization that were underneath us. So in the military, there's two different factions, so to speak. There's the enlisted corps. The enlisted corps are the workers. You can move up within the worker ranks, and you can be management, but it's like middle management. You could be like that. And then the officers, who are the true managers, the, I don't know how you would equate it in the business world, but the ones that are in charge, the ones that make the decisions and do those things. So it was me and my buddy who were the officers, and we had 280 workers in middle management. So it was quite a day. So we had quite a bit of those folks, and got a lot of kickback. Good organization didn't matter. Good ideas, good thoughts didn't matter. And we got a lot of kickback. So it was really hard. It was really, really hard. On top of that, when you deploy as a reservist or a guardsman, you're entitled to benefits 6 months ahead of time before you deploy. And if you get orders in your hand saying you are going to deploy, the most or the longest period that anybody had ever had that on our base was 3 weeks. And most people, as they're getting on the plane with all of their stuff, were handed a piece of paper that said, here's your orders. But these orders, what that means is your medical benefits, for you and your family, your pay. So none of that was taken care of prior to our members going. So my goal in life was to get these orders in these folks' hands. And we got them 3 months ahead of time, so it was pretty good. I felt like it was an accomplishment. It was hard, though. It was really hard. Plenty of calls from our leadership up to the Pentagon and up to all those buildings around there in D.C. saying, where is all this stuff? This is not acceptable. So it was really hard. And then the undermining on top of it. So we're trying to get all this accomplished, and then the undermining on top of it. So that was tough. And then my buddy asked me, he said, hey, I need you to take the main body. So I had 200 folks. I need to get 200 folks over to Afghanistan. And I said, okay, I got it. No problem. So we got on a plane. We had all sorts of problems with it. We ended up in Qatar, which was a hit. It was 115 degrees. We're living in trailers. The trailers were showers, didn't have the water running well. It was awful. So we're trying to get all this stuff done. Okay, get on a plane, go through customs, get on a plane, get your gun, get your bags. Okay, we're in the air, don't turn around, go back down, go back through customs, turn your stuff back in. That happened seven times. It was tough. And kicked back the entire time. Well, you guys can't go down there. We have to repack that. You know we have to intent, right? I'm big on intent, right? So I'm trying to fight for my folks this entire time. Got next to no sleep for a week, trying to get folks into Afghanistan to fight a war. And so going into Afghanistan after all this stuff, I was completely spent. And that's not to mention anything about my marriage, which was not going well at the time. So Michelle and I were not in a good place. Before leaving, she's having to deal with all this stuff. Well, I'm having to deal with all this stuff too, and I can't deal with this stuff with her, right? And so that didn't go over too well, as you can imagine. And so that wasn't going well either. So man, what do I do now? And now I'm in a war zone. Now we start, right? And that was really, really tough. While we were over there, I had a lot of struggle with the people that reported directly to me, a lot of undermining again, a lot of people questioning the decisions that I made, even though they were perfectly in line with everything my leadership had ever taught me, the schools had ever taught me, the practical application had taught me, the things that I'd seen, I was getting questioned now. In a war zone. So that was really tough. My buddy and I, we had a massive falling out. He leads very, very differently than I do. Being in a leadership position, if anybody's ever been in a leadership position, there's a lot of filters, right?
You get a ton of direction from the top, and you get a ton of feedback from the bottom, and you got to filter it each way. You know, that's part of your job, is to filter. And so I was filtering a lot of stuff and getting a lot of flack from it, from my buddy. So couldn't confide in him much. The marriage was absolutely not going well. That was a huge struggle. So couldn't confide in my wife. And then the threat of rocket attacks was real, but it wasn't very prevalent at that time. I mean, this is 2019, so the war was kind of winding down here in the South. It wasn't super prevalent at that place. So that wasn't too bad. But what I didn't anticipate and didn't expect was the fact that there were only about 500 military on the base, and there were 4,000 or 5,000 people on the base. So we have people looking like us right now on the base all over the place. I had no idea who these people are. And it's Afghanistan, think Arizona, okay, Arizona type weather. So everybody's nice and tan. Everybody looks the same inside and outside of the gate. And by the way, you have local nationals working on my base, helping us out, contractor. Who's the enemy? Where is the enemy? What's going on? And by the way, I've got 280 people here that I got to worry about. So really, really messed me up mentally. Really messed me up. So the redeployment. So coming back. So that's during the entire deployment. Coming back from the deployment. That was an interesting thing. We had to go back through cover again. Again, my buddy asked me. He said, I need you to get these 12 aircraft. Take 40 dudes, C-17, these 12 aircraft, get them back across the world. And I'm like, okay, fine, no problem. This sounds awesome, actually. So let's do this. Okay, cool. So we get on the aircraft, we get everything ready, everything kicks out of Afghanistan, no problem. Get on the C-17, get out of Afghanistan, no problem. Good, got my 40 people, great. And if we cut it, again, which was awful, it was hotter this time. And so this is all awful, great. We get delayed. All right, fine, we get delayed, no problem. We finally pack the C-17 up, they decided to take some stuff off the C-17. Even though we didn't approve it, and now we can't do certain maintenance on the aircraft. We get to, I went from all of this, right, to Afghanistan, to Qatar, and then we ended up landed on the island of Crete. Anybody ever been to Crete? It's like a paradise, right? It was awesome. I couldn't believe it. But one of my chiefs, he wanted to break the planes so that we could stay in
the It was awesome.
It was absolutely awesome. I was eating lunch on the Mediterranean after all this, right? So I'm eating lunch on the Mediterranean, but we had all sorts of problems with the crew, the C-17 crew. I had pilots. The pilots were bucking back at me like crazy. Absolutely crunched at me. It was bad. It was really, really bad. Really bad. People got fired when we got back. That's how bad it was. So that was pretty horrible. And then we got to Germany, and then we got stuck. The C-17 was like, oh, okay, you're going to be a couple more weeks, no problem. Boom. Kicked all our stuff out the back and left. There we go. So we had no airplane to get back home. Couldn't hop out of a plane. We had to keep some folks there. I am not leaving people behind while I go home. So I stayed with two other folks. And we were there for about 2 weeks. Stuck in Germany, which isn't that bad, right? Except we might have a plane every single day. So that was pretty awful. And then the family stuff was still going on. The hardest part of the deployment, for anybody who's not aware or hasn't gone through this, is not going. Going is really, really easy. This is what we train for, right? We train. So the actual fight is not hard, relatively speaking, right? It's the coming home. You know, leaving people behind is okay. Being left behind is probably horrible. But then coming home is just as terrible. Because they've learned to live without you for the last 4, 6, 8, 12 months. And now you gotta come back home. And you're in the way. And marriage is not good, right? So a whole lot of stuff going on. On top of this, something was wrong. And I didn't know what was wrong. So, Q can probably tell you. It's a little bit Bob to tell you. Something was wrong. I didn't know what was wrong. Yeah, I got offered the job when I got off the plane. That was great. That was awesome. Couldn't handle large crowds. Didn't like being around people. I go to work every day. That was a comfort. Work, execution, I can do that. I can execute. I can go through. You get back in that mode, you go through. No problem. But on Wednesday at noon when the sirens went off, it's not good. Start sweating, start crying. Every single week for, I don't know, 3 years. So it was hard. It was hard. I didn't know how to handle it. I didn't know what was going on. And I got pretty quiet. Anybody who knew me before then knew I was a little louder. But I got pretty quiet. This is actually why I was partially fun sharing with you guys today what all I've gone through, because it's been a couple of years since I felt like I've been normal. And I'm getting back there to a better place than where I was even before I left. I had certain comforts. My family was great. Michelle's been phenomenal. We're better than we've ever been. Being around my kids was awesome. Being around anybody else kind of sucked. I didn't really talk much, but it is what it is. One of the main reasons that I wanted to share this with everybody today, and I was perfectly fine sharing this with everybody today, is being vulnerable is fine. That's okay. And what I really was reinforced, it mentally, but until you experience it, sometimes it doesn't quite hit home. But Christ is the cornerstone, right? And I knew this. I knew this mentally. But experiencing this was a little harder for me, right? He's the cornerstone. And he tore down a whole lot of stuff in my life. He tore down everything that I had ever learned and thought that I had built leadership-wise. And that was like the foundation of my career. And that's a big part of who I was. He tore it all down. He made me question every decision that I made. And that's okay. But he was a cornerstone. He never left me. Those things never left me. The things that he taught me never left me. But he can rebuild back new on top of that cornerstone, right? So the foundation is there. When the hurricane comes through, it can tear down a house. But if the foundation is solid, it's still there, you can rebuild a house on it. You can build it differently. You can build it better. And that's something that I definitely learned about. He did. I'll never be the person that I was before I left, and I know that. My wife and I have talked about that at length. But the cornerstone remains solid, and I'm very appreciative of that. How did that play in? Like I said, a good foundation in faith is 100% of what's sustaining. Time is a very interesting thing, right? Even though I've had a very, very busy adult life, I felt like I had a lot more time earlier, going to school full-time, working full-time, I still felt like I had time, right? But it looks a lot different now. One of the things that I'm trying to do, I shared with my wife a few years ago, I've been poured into with leadership theory for years. That's all I've been poured in with, is leadership theory. I'm an aircraft maintenance squadron commander, and I couldn't care less about the aircraft. I take care of my people, and I lead my people, they take care of the aircraft. That's how it works. And so I got all this leadership theory, and I told my wife a couple of years ago, I'm like, how do I lead my home? How do I lead my kids and teach them about Christ and show them Christ with my life? I'm like, man, I don't want to do that. So I'm trying to figure that part out, right? So time looks very, very different now, but it's there, right? So how do I do that? So that's a very, very important thing. It's looked a lot differently. So instead of meeting with people on a consistent basis, I just can't. I just don't have the time for that. But I do have a drive, which is great. I work out of Selfridge. That's about 45 minutes from here each way. So I can call people on my drive, which I very much appreciate, getting feedback from people, and a lot of people pour into me, which is awesome. So just looks a little bit different. And then a little bit more about me. Who am I? One of the verses that's really impacted me throughout my entire Christian life is to not be ashamed. Right?
I've got a tattoo of my arms to be unashamed for the gospel. It's power and grace for salvation to those who believe. And I believe in Christ the Savior. It's been awesome. And that's one thing that has sustained me throughout all these years, throughout all these things that have happened. What am I striving to achieve? One of the things that really hit home, like I've always loved Ecclesiastes 1:11, but it really hit home, obviously, when all this stuff happened. But Ecclesiastes 1:11 says, "Yet I surveyed all that my hands had done and all that I had toiled to achieve. Everything was meaningless, chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun." There's a lot of stuff that we can do here in this life. There's a lot of things that we can build. There's a lot of empires that we can build. There's a lot of widgets that we can generate, right? But none of that stuff matters outside of Christ. We have Christ and he exudes in our life. That's what matters. And at the end of the day, do I want people to look at me and go, "Oh yeah, he was a great leader," or "he was a great military man," or "he was this or that"? I don't. I want people to look at me and say, "He exuded Christ in his life." Whatever that means, whatever that looks like. And then I do feel like I'm gifted in leadership. I'm put in leadership positions at work. This is what I do. So how should I lead? I really try to lead by being all things to all people. I don't try to be somebody I'm not, but I do try to show them that I care about who they are. 1 Corinthians 19 through 23 says, "Though I am free to belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone, to win as many as possible. To the Jew, I became a Jew, to win Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, though I am myself not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I become like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but I am under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law." I'm trying to be all things to all people. Trying to show Christ and be genuine to them. So, three things to take away. I have no idea how I'm doing on time. The three things to take away: a strong foundation of Christ is the only way to remain firm in good times and bad. You can tear down the house, but he is always faithful. Second thing is to utilize what you see while being true to how you've been gifted. Be introspective and truly understand yourself, understand who you are, and have grace while understanding other people, because not everybody is like you. Not everybody is like you. So have grace when understanding other people. And then surround yourself by the body of Christ. There's many parts to the body, and we all have a function. So that's it. That's all I got.
Looks like I was able to grab it.